Many Americans and other people all over the world aspire to be business owners and entrepreneurs. These passionate entrepreneurs want to build the next Starbucks, Whole Foods, Microsoft, Google, or the next YouTube. So in order to take their business to the next level, these individuals need money and expertise. So how much money do you need to close a deal, to do a deal? What does it take to close a deal? And what are investors looking for? How do you select the right investor for your company? And what are the keys to success? We're speaking with Karen Ranz of Launch Funding Network and the Network of Business Angels and Investors, which is part of Cougaran family of companies. During her career, Karen has raised over $25 million for growth companies. Welcome, Karen.
Hello, Ken. How are you today?
So enlighten us. So the first question is, how much money do you really need when you're starting a company?
Well, the money you need to start a company typically is based on the business plan that you have. You have to first figure out what is it going to take to get to your first positive cash flow. And however much money that is how much money you need to raise, with probably about 10 to 25% in addition, just to have a little cush. So the very first purpose of a business plan is to figure out how much money you need in order to get to the point of having cash flow to pay all your bills.
So does it mean, do you need $100,000, you need $500,000, $1 million?
It depends on the company. Okay, if it's opening up a restaurant, it might be $500,000. If it's launching a new type of life science product, a new medical breakthrough, it might be $10 million. You know, just you have to figure out what it is that you're going to need for your particular type of company. And then you have to figure out what are the stages in which to go and raise that money. Because if you're just a startup, for example, and say it's a life sciences type of a company, to go out and try to raise $5 million before you've actually done anything, the likelihood of getting it is probably almost impossible. But you have to give up way too much of your company if you don't have certain things already done that establish the value of your company.
So how do you do that? I mean, what you mentioned a business plan. So how do you write a business plan? How do you figure out how much money you need for your company?
Well, most people, when they're getting ready to start a business, they're experts within that particular field. And so they are the experts, and they know, like if they're starting a medical products company, they probably come out of the medical field. So they know what the cost is for FDA approval, or for lab testing, or for when you do animal testing on a product, and then clinical testing, and all those different phases that you go through, the actual R&D and invention of that, you know, that all varies. Whereas somebody that's, you know, looking to invent a new widget and take that to market, there's certain things that can be done in first starting the company before you get to actual manufacturing. And you can do a lot with selling a few of them if it's something that can be custom made. And you can start to show some cash flow and some demand in the marketplace for a product before you actually incur additional expenses of, you know, creating molds or ramping up a large manufacturing facility. So it's all done in stages, and it really just depends on the type of company and the type of product that they're trying to take to market.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. So in terms of different industries, you might need $1 million, you might need $100,000, you might need $2 or $10 million. So it all depends on your business plan.
Right, and companies as they grow need other money. So, you know, what we, if I would say there was any kind of traditional, typical process, you're going to start out with a friends and family round that's anywhere from $50,000 to $200,000 that's going to give you the working capital you need for the entrepreneur to be focused on it 100% and not having necessarily to do a day job as part of it, and to get the product developed and patented or patent pending, or at least a working prototype, whether it's software or an actual widget or something like that. That's traditional types of, you know, a company, a new company, a market maker company. And it allows you to validate your marketplace and getting your business plan done, and validating that there's a demand in the marketplace, and doing your competitive research. And then from that, then you can start to show what the value of your company would be in the marketplace if it was in the marketplace, and justify going out and raising $1 million or $2 million that actually lets you ramp up staff and be able to go to market to sell the product and get your strategic relationships in place. And that money should be the last money you need to actually start generating revenue, whatever that next chunk of change is. And then beyond that would be expansion money. And if you're in the technology space, it might be VC money. If you're in the venture capital money, if you're in a more traditional sector business, it might be private equity fund money. And you get beyond the angel round, which would have been that $1 million or $2 million. And that money is the money that the private equity funds and the venture capital funds look for: companies that have revenues, that have the ability to go from $1 million in revenue to $100 million in revenue, but they need $10-20 million to do that. And that's the point in which you go to those people for funds.
You mentioned something that I think would be great to have clarification on. When you talk about venture capital, there's different types of sources for funds. There's angel investing, there's venture capital. Could you define for us the difference between angel investors and venture capital?
Angel investors are individuals that make a decision to invest in a company, and they use their own funds to do that. They write a check out of their checking account, they write a check out of their, they use their IRA, whatever. Okay. Venture capital is pooled funds from individual investors as well as family trusts and institutional funds that pool their money together. It's managed by somebody. It has a specific mission to invest in certain kinds of companies with certain criteria, and they are obligated to invest that money or they have to give it back.
So what would be the criteria? Should you choose an angel investor or should you go for venture capital?
Well, it's back to the stage of the company. If it's early stage, pre-revenue, the likelihood of getting venture capital money is extremely rare and it's mostly, it's really a lot, almost everything having to do with raising money in whatever stage of the company is dollars and cents. It's just mathematical stuff. All you got to do is look at the mathematics. An individual investor might have $1 million that they're going to invest over time, or $500,000 they're going to invest over time. So they may be looking for 2, 3, 4 deals to put that money to work in. And a lot of what they're doing is subjective, in that they decide they like a company, it fits a certain base criteria, but they just like it. They like the founder of it. A lot of it is done on relationships. Then when you have venture capital money that might have $50 million or $100 million, well, the very nature of the fact that they've got this large amount of funds that needs to be invested, they don't want to be invested in 1,000 companies because they can't manage to the return on investment and help and make and manage and watch that investment with 1,000 companies. They might want to invest in 25 companies out of that $100 million. So that means that they're going to make anywhere from $4 to $10 million investment in a company. In order to put a $4 to $10 million investment, that company has to have a valuation of at least, for $4 million, at least a $16 million valuation. And for a $10 million investment, at least probably a $40 million valuation.
So for our listeners listening to this conversation we're having, angel investors, those people are willing to invest from what minimum to what's the top?
Well, the national average is $30,000 that an individual investor will invest in a company. That's probably one of the biggest misperceptions that entrepreneurs have about raising money, is that they think they're going to go out and get, they're raising $1 million, they're going to get four guys that are going to put $250,000 a piece in, and they'll be done. And that would be wonderful and, a utopia land for raising money. But the reality is that the average investor is only willing to put $30,000, maybe $50,000 at risk in a individual company.
So it's probably, $5,000-$10,000 up to, $1 million for angel investors?
Well, when you're doing a friends and family round, you probably structure that at $10,000 a piece. And you can go get, you're going to get, 10 people to put in $10,000, so you got $100,000 to get going. And, that's and you set up a very specific type of a deal for them. And then when you've accomplished some things and you've built the value of your company up to $4 or $5 million, then you go out and get $1 million and give up another 20% of your company from angel investors. If they're investing $25,000 a piece, then that's 40 investors. And that's probably the biggest, that's the biggest thing that companies, and when we deal with companies, they always think they're going to get a fewer number. But it goes back to the math. For somebody to stroke a $250,000 check into a company, that means they've got play money of at least $1 million that year that they're going to put into companies. For somebody to have play money of $1 million, you know, that's 10% of the total portfolio or 10% of their earnings, you know, they're making $10 million a year in income. Those are few and far between. Mm-hmm. To qualify as an angel investor or accredited investor, it's, you know, only $400,000 or $350,000 combined income and $1 million in net worth. So, you know, that the average investor that most often is involved is probably has an income of $1 million a year.
Okay. The bell's tolling. Maybe we'll have to end the conversation, but let's continue. So you've got angel investors and you've got the VC. So if you're going after VC money, you're looking at $1 million, $10 million from venture capital companies?
I mean, the average investment that an early stage VC will put in, about $2 million is the smallest that they'll put in, and that's usually if they're syndicating with somebody else because they don't want to take all the risk themselves to do a $4 or $5 million round. And that's for early stage ones. The more of an expansion stage type, an early stage by VC's definition is $1 million in revenue minimum, okay, with a pipeline of about $5 million. So that's their definition of early stage. An angel investor's definition of an early stage company is they've got the basics done with a product developed and patented, and they got the basics of a management team in place, and they're ready to go to market. They may be pre-revenue, and they've got this $1 million they're raising is going to get them all the way through to revenue and cash flow.
Okay, you've mentioned and shared this with me called the Cougarans theory. Is it the Cougarans theory of money, or what? What is that theory all about?
Cougarans theory of private equity investing. And this goes back to the misperceptions that companies have on how much does it take to raise, what does it take to raise $1 million, let's say. Use that as the example. The thing you have to understand is that it all comes down to a subjective or objective approach that investors take to in making an investment. When you're dealing with, it's kind of like, I like to kind of compare it like when you're, if somebody's trying to sell cars, there's two types of buyers. There's somebody that is driving by, has seen a car down the street or something, heard about a car, you know, says, this is exactly the kind of car that I would like to have. It's completely emotional decision. They walk on the lot, they buy the car, you know, and it's a great thing for the sales guy. An objective investor is somebody that says, you know what, I need a new car. I'm in the market for a car. A car has to have four doors, or it's got to have, you know, a certain kind of function inside of it, you know, certain kind of features and benefits, and they're going to go around and shop around looking for the car that they want to buy. When it comes to angel investors, there's a group of investors that you'll meet that will buy, that will, like doctors are notorious for investing in medical products companies because they see a real need for it, and they don't necessarily look at the fundamentals of the business and how they're going to go to market or a lot of your business issues. And so they'll just invest because they see a need, they just think this thing will be great when it gets to market, and they want a piece of the action. And that's what you would call your affinity group. The objective investors are people that are in the business of investing, and they're looking at, they're going to make an investment. They've got to decide which company to invest in. So contrary to our common belief where I'm trying to promote my company, instead, an objective investor is looking at companies differently. They're looking at reasons not to invest, because that's the only way that they can narrow the list down to be able to get to the one or two that they're going to actually invest in.
So in summary, the Cougar end.
Yeah. So then when you think about that, you have to understand that you have to talk to a lot of investors in order to find the ones that are actually going to invest in your deal. So the Cougaran theory of private equity investing says that if you're raising $1 million at $25,000 increments, because that's the average that people invest, you're going to have 40 investors. To get to 40 investors, actually check writers, you'll have, for every one, you'll have three that you think will write a check because they express, oh, this is great, this is, yeah, call me next week, you know, and then they go on vacation and they forget about you. And so, you know, you wonder, well, that guy seemed like he was really interested. And of course, entrepreneurs are eternal optimists, so they interpret everything that they say as being that they're going to write the check, and it may or may, the investor may just be being nice, you know. So anyway, so for every one that strokes a check, you'll have three that you think will write a check. So for 40 investors, that's 120 that you will at some point in time have thought we're going to write a check for you.
So this is a money game. This is a sales game, money. Oh, okay.
To get to the 120, you will have had 600 look at your plan, either have read it, been introduced to you, have seen you at a presentation where you pitched the thing. And so the two biggest reasons why companies don't reach all the funding, they may be raising $1 million and they get stuck at 200,000, they don't ever raise their full $1 million, is because they simply do not talk to enough investors. They plan on talking to 40 investors.
So it is a numbers game.
It absolutely is a number game, just like sales, just like selling cars. It's just you figure out who's your target market, how are you going to target them. You've got to get their level of interest in whatever kind of product that you have, your company, you're selling your shares, and you've got to have a strategy that gets you enough volume of potential investors so that you can actually close the ones that you need to make your goals.
So that is the Cougaran theory. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what does it take to close a deal?
Well, for closing a deal, the biggest reasons why we see investors don't invest in companies, they may love the business plan, they may love the concept, they think it's got great potential. Either they don't have their investor documents put together so that the investor can actually stroke a check. We had a company that presented at one of our events. We had four investors that wanted to invest in that company, and the company did not have the documents. And they told me they were going to have the documents, but they didn't have the documents to actually stroke the check. That's like having a product you developed and you don't know, and you know you want to sell it for like $5. You got this widget, you're at a flea market, but you don't have any change, you don't have a way to take any money, you don't have a way, you don't have a way to actually take the person's money. That anybody in a regular business would think that was ludicrous. So once you decide you're going to go get investor money, you got to get your documents together so that you can actually take the money. The second thing is that they simply do not follow through with investors. So, you know, to close the deal.
I can't believe that. They don't follow through. The money's there, and they don't follow through. They don't have the paperwork, and they're not.
Yeah, in this case, I ran into this guy, and I said, you know, there's like four investors. They call me asking about your company. He still had not gotten, this is 2 months later, he still had not gotten the paperwork together. Just crazy.
Well, why is that, though? Why? I'm trying to figure this out.
I don't know. Okay. And so, you know, so for the closing of the deal, the thing is having your paperwork, and then the reasons why investors most often don't invest is because the valuation is out of whack, and the terms of the deal are not what an investor wants. You know, the investor is looking for two things when they go to make a decision to invest. They're looking for a pay raise. They want to know why your company is going to make them more money than wherever their money's working for them right now. And then they want to mitigate their risk. So they want to know that when they invest in this, they've got a way to get out of the company goes belly up. They've got a way to not get crammed down if a VC comes in. They want to make sure that their investment is somewhat protected in the process.
But you mentioned terms. So are they looking to invest to get a certain return off their investment, or they want to take that money out at some point? What do you mean by terms of the deal?
Well, the terms of the deal are most often it's you know, is it common stock or preferred stock? Does it have warrants? Is it a convertible note, which is a loan to the company that gets paid back, or sometimes at the discretion of the company will be converted into stock with some kind of warrant? So those are all, it depends on the structure of the deal. Investors prefer preferred over common. Mm-hmm. They prefer, if a company doesn't have a strong valuation, they prefer a convertible note with warrants. They, if the company, you know, part of it is because they look at, you know, depending on your valuation, when they look at the potential for the liquidity event, you know, if you start out and your shares are, say, you know, sometimes you have some crazy things where it's like $10,000 a share, or you have, because, and that's really just because the company just didn't make enough shares, so they have to charge a lot for one share rather than having 10,000 shares for a buck a piece. There's a psychological aspect of that where an investor looks at it and they know when a company goes public, most likely it's going to be more than a dollar a share. So if a company's going to go public at $18 a share, let's say, because they've created that kind of value, then I'm getting 18 times my money.
Okay. So is this for investors, angel investors, is this a short-term investment or is it a long-term? Is this for a year or 5 years? Or is this for a 10-year? What kind of commitment when you talk about a
The average exit is in 7 years. That's the typical on that. That's why it's got to be, you know, they're moving their money from someplace that they might be collecting interest on it now into something that's not going to make them any money, and they don't know. That's why it's so high risk. They don't know if they're ever going to make money on the deal. And, you know, just like with VCs, you know, not every deal is successful. The rule of thumb is out of 10 companies, three will go belly up, three will do okay, two will do above average, and one will hit it out of the park that makes up for all the others. Wow. And so that's the reason why you have an average of $30,000, because somebody's putting money in, they don't want to put $300,000 in and that's all they got. They want to put it into 10 companies at $30,000 a piece. Right?
Okay, I got that.
Okay,
got that.
And so the whole idea is that it's going to take 5 to 7 years before they have a liquidity event. They need to know and they need to see progress from the company that it's continuing to go up and the value of the company is going up, even though it's not liquid. They know that their stock was bought at a buck a share, and when a company sends out their announcements, their quarterly updates, or they get a valuation done by an outside party 2 years into it and they're now $5 or $6 a share, they feel good about that because they know even though they're not liquid, at least they're on paper, they're going up in value.
So what are investors, angel investors, looking for when they're looking for prospects for their hard-earned dollars?
They're looking to create wealth. They're looking to have some bragging rights on the golf course or at a cocktail party, right? Oh, I invested in this little company, you know, that's makes this great widget or something, you know. They want this part of it. There's also, in some cases, if it's an active investor and has good industry contacts, the same as that company, then they like to be able to help the company. Because most often, if you think about, most investors have made their money because they were successful as an entrepreneur themselves. It's the fun of being in the hunt. So you'll have some investors that will lend their resources and their experience to the company, you know, when it makes sense, and help that company, you know, succeed as well. So it's kind of, and they're going to make money in the process. So, you know, other than that, it's more like a lot of our investors are just passive investors that just put money in based on a term sheet or a PPM, private placement memorandum, and they just do it mostly as a diversification of their portfolio. They can lose the money, but if they make the money, it's going to, you know, have great, huge returns compared to anything else in their portfolio.
So here's the question. Is there different investors for different companies? So how do you select the right investor for your company?
Well, there are occasions when there's bad investors, you know, and that's when...
Hold up. A bad investor. How can that be a bad? If a person has money, they're not a bad investor, are they?
No, because if they're ignorant of the investment process, and they can become a bad investor because they start bugging the company. They don't understand it's going to take 7 years to get their money back. So they have this expectation, and they get nervous about their money, and it's an illiquid investment, and they want their money back, and they can't get it. And so they want to know how the company's doing because they're really nervous about it. And so they call the CEO every month asking for information and an update. And all that does is distract the CEO from being able to do the work he needs to do to make the company successful.
Never thought of that. So there's bad investors and good investors.
So you want an investor that's sophisticated enough to understand the process and that they're passive in it, unless they have very specific skills and resources that bring value to the company. Then you invite them in to be active in your company, on a board seat or in an interim management role or something like that. So you want to, one of the reasons why you create a private placement memorandum, particularly if you're raising, over $500,000, is that you want to establish the rights and the kind of the roles and how things are going to be done with the investor. And you want to be able to have a quarterly report that you send out to your investors, and that's how they communicate. They can email you questions about it, those kind of things. And, you try to get, because, some of the companies we're working with, they may have 80 to 100 investors, and they can't take calls from 100 investors. So they establish the communication process, which is sending out almost like a quarterly report, like a public company does on here's, the updates, what's happened. And if a company's proactive in doing that, they won't get bugged by the calls. And you also have to have the private placement memorandum because it establishes the risks associated with it. If you do not have one, the biggest problem that companies encounter is that if they don't have proper investor documents, the risks are not fully disclosed. And so the investor can come back and sue them and get their money back, even though the company may not have the money. And that's a bad investor, because if they were unsophisticated and did not understand that this money was highly risky and illiquid, then they come back and sue. The SEC will say that the company didn't establish it correctly and you shouldn't have taken this guy's money, so now you got to give it back.
So what we're looking for, what a company should look for, is our sophisticated investors. That's the right investor for a company looking for money.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So, in summary, so what are the keys to success? What are the keys to success if you're trying to raise money?
I would say probably two major things. One is figuring out what's the right amount of money for the stage of the company, so you don't go after too much money that you get into a conflict, conceptual conflict, where you're not willing to give up as much equity as the investors expect you to give up for the amount that you're seeking. So seeking the right amount. Then the other thing is figuring out what's the proper strategy to go out and get the money, and budgeting and planning for it. Because to raise $1 million, for example, is probably going to cost a company at least $30,000 to do that.
Really? Okay. So it takes money to raise money.
Oh, yeah, because they've got legal fees. They've got to be able to fly around the country and meet with investors. They've got to be able to pay to participate in events. Then a portion of that, depending on who they're working with, a finder or a broker, they're going to pay success fees as a result of getting that money. But there will definitely be upfront fees. They need to plan on budgeting for that to be able to go after it. And then the more money you're trying to raise, the longer it's going to take and the more money it's going to cost, because you need to be, in this day and age, you need to be very creative in how you reach that, those, as in that example I gave before, that 600 investors. And the internet's a good way to do it if you do it right. And you get the advice of somebody that has been successful in doing it to guide you along that way. It's just like when you're doing your financials, or when if you were sick, you wouldn't not go to a doctor and just diagnose yourself. You go get a professional opinion. Well, that's the same thing with raising money. There's people that are professionals that know how investors think. They know what investors are looking for. They know how to connect you with investors, and you need to see about hiring people like that to help you.
So those are the keys to success.
Yeah, right amount of money targeted to the right potential buyer.
So I can see how Karen Rands has raised over $25 million in, 13 years? That's pretty impressive. And you're just getting started.
This is true.
So in summary, for our listeners, what is it that you want the listeners to take away from this conversation about angel investing and investing in general?
be smart about going after your capital raise, determining that exactly what you, that you need to do that. If there's a way to grow it organically, then to increase your value, do that. And then from there, you know, just don't waste time and money raising money that's not right for you. I see so many companies raise time and money. They've got a fundamental flaw in their business. Something's not quite right. They're running after dollars that they'll never get. And, you know, you just need to be very smart. And so often companies don't know what they don't know. So that's when you get counsel on what is it going to take to go and raise that money. And if you take counsel from somebody, make sure that they know, they have access to the type of investors that they say. We get companies that come to us sometimes that are going to go, oh, well, they said it was easier for me to raise $5 million than $500,000, so I should raise $5 million. I'm like, well, okay, do they have access to people that will give you $5 million that they said that? You know, are you ready to give up 75% of your company for that $5 million? No, then you need to raise $500,000 and get your company to that next level.
Mm-hmm. So, Karen, you've shared with us a lot of practical tips on raising money. How do we reach you? What's your contact information?
For companies, the best way to reach us is to go through the Launch Funding Network website. That's launchfundingnetwork.com, L-A-U-N-C-H, Funding Network. And you'll see there's some contact information on there. You can also go under the Get Started tab and register and provide us with some basic information about your company, and we'll schedule time on to do a teleconference consultation with you about what's the right kind of money for you, when, where, and what do you need to do to go get it.
Excellent, excellent. And what's your website?
Launchfundingnetwork.com. For investors that might be listening, you can go to the Network of Business Angels and Investors website, which is nbai.net, Network Business Angel Investor, nbai.net. And then the holding company, CougarAnnHoldings.com, and that has references in there to both all the companies that are operating within Cougar Ann Holdings.
All right. So we've been speaking with Karen Ranz of Launch Funding Network and the Network of Business Angel and Investors, part of the family of Cougar Ann.
And
Cougar Ann is all about money, right?
That's right. Cougar Ann, it's all about the money. Sounds like money, it's about the money. We are venture catalysts, speeding up the process of companies getting to market and getting the capital and resources they need. And also visit our new blog, right? Entrepreneurblogspace.com. Entrepreneurblogspace.com.
And don't forget the other one.
And the other one for investors is My Virtual Angel World.
MyVirtualAngelWorld.com.
So come and read those blogs, add your comments. Love to hear from you.
All right. Karen Ranz, Cougar Ann Holdings. She has raised over $25 million, and she's just getting started. Thank you. And Karen, will you come back?
Absolutely.
All right. We'll have you back real soon.
Thanks,
Thank you very
Karen.
Much.